Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today we're talking about making a hybrid workforce work for your company. Many HR professionals recognize that a hybrid work environment is what many employees are seeking. While creating policies and expectations are one element of appropriately implementing a hybrid work environment, many companies are struggling to, quote unquote, make it work. The question of how to engage employees and create an inclusive environment is difficult in person, let alone when we're dealing with it remotely. Add into that managing a team that is partially in person and partially remote, depending on the days of the week or the hours of the day, and managers certainly have their hands full. Enter our guest today, Dr. Carrie Ulrich, co-founder of Abraki Group and co-author of The Weight of the HR Warrior. Today, we're going to be discussing how HR warriors can use the CHARGE framework to manage the hybrid work environment. Welcome, Dr. Ulrich, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tani. And it's funny, Tani, because the name is that last name Ulrich, but the group name is Abraci in Italian. So it means embrace and hug. And we love that because we embrace talent, people, where they're at, and kind of the foolishness and the craziness that comes up in HR. We actually embrace it. Yeah.
I absolutely love that. And I love the description of why the name is what it is, because I think we do not often enough embrace all that is a part of this job and working in human resources generally.
Yeah. I always say, if you're going to embrace the good stuff, you got to embrace the not so good stuff. So we're just going to embrace it all. Because if we don't embrace it, no one's going to do it, right? Like it will not get done if we don't embrace it. So you got to embrace the whole thing.
I 100% agree. And it's interesting because even earlier today, I was on a call with someone and I said, we haven't talked in a while, but I guess that's good for you and less good for me, because usually when you're calling your employment lawyer, things aren't going great. So
100%.
One of the reasons I so enjoy this side gig so that I do get to talk about the really cool and wonderful things that individuals kind of are doing in the HR realm and ways in which we can be problem solvers kind of outside of the law and really look at different ways that people are making at work. With that, what can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and kind of why you're here talking about this topic? I always say, you know, I like to have people who are thought leaders, but oftentimes people need to understand, like, why are you the thought leader here and what's your background?
Yeah. So started off in pretty big HR organizations. So when I was just a little pup in HR, it was 300 HR people and me. And I thought that was typical. And then I found out, oh no, that is not typical at all. So I got to cut my teeth on really great programs and understanding HR at a really high level and a really deep level. So it was wonderful. So I've done my stints as generalist and specialist at bigger companies and some smaller companies and some different industries. And then at the same time, got my PhD in human development and organizational systems, because I love the interplay of it's what makes HR so beautiful is that you can help individuals and you can coach individuals, and maybe they get that job they wanted or the manager's struggling with something. And so you get this impact on the individual level. But then in HR, because you can set programs, you can impact the entire organization. So you can not just impact one person, but 5,000 or 500. And you can create programs that help the organization reach its goals, which is lovely, but also for the beautiful hippies in all of us, that you really get to help people. If it's a better environment, people are happier, they go home happier, they have a better home life. I mean, It's beautiful. And so in HR, we have the ability to impact all of that. So got the PhD in that, and then started a Brachi group with my one of my colleagues. And we've been at it, I think today or yesterday was our 6-year anniversary. Yeah.
Well, happy anniversary.
Yeah. Thank you. So it's hard to start your own business and to keep it surviving. And we did that through the pandemic. So we're really happy. And so we help HR in a fractional way. We help people. But then also during this time, I also wrote a book. I sometimes forget about that, Tani. So you're like, could you, that's why you're here, stooge. I'm like, yeah, that's right. That's
well,
right.
That's not the only reason. No, if you hadn't written the book, I still would want to talk to you. But no, I definitely think some people are like, oh, and I kind of wrote a book and I want to like, we're just footnoting that, or should we like maybe highlight this wonderful book that you've written?
Thanks. I do. I said to someone one time, I said, well, I don't know, I'm not a doctor. They said, actually, you are. And I thought, oh yeah, shit, that's right, I am. I totally forgot. Anyway, I tend to forget details even of my own life. So while I was in one of the bigger companies, Monica and I really talked about HR and what was needed in HR and what skills we were seeing that were lacking and what the business clients were telling us, the business partners were telling us that they needed. And so that's why we wrote the book, The Way of the HR Warrior, which is very much a love letter for HR on these are these great skills that we need to be these amazing warriors and performers in the organization because the organization needs us.
No, I 100% agree. And I love kind of this love letter concept of like, how do we make sure that even, you know, it's a difficult job. A lot of people take it home. It's sometimes very difficult to leave at your desk, but kind of all of those elements into the way of the HR warrior generally. So super exciting. And one of the aspects kind of in general, you know, you and I have talked about this as in our first conversation, is this charge framework that you have developed. Let's talk a little bit more about what is this charge framework. There's moments where I want to be like, it's a change framework. And I'm like, no, change that N for an R. It's a charge.
Right.
But then it's got also that power that kind of you've already been discussing without using it. So let's talk a little bit about the power behind this charge framework.
Yeah, thank you. So it is charge and warrior. So it was very much a deliberate choice to call it that. I think, again, when Monica and I wrote it, it was around what are those skills that you need? In HR, you hear a lot, especially if you're starting your career, you'll hear you need to have a seat at the table and be a strategic business partner. I how am I supposed to be a strategic business partner? People tell me I should be it, but I don't know how to do it. And we found quite a few missing fundamental skills. So when we talked to business leaders, we said, what do you want out of your HR person? And they would tell us. And so what they told us and what we saw as successful was charge. And so C is for courage. So it's all about how you make, how you show up, how you, I like to say sometimes if you feel like you're going to get fired, you're probably using the courage muscle right there, that you're the one saying something, or if people have said to you, oh, I'm so glad you said that. Thank you for saying that. You've been using courage. I have had that feeling quite a few times. And then H is for humility. And so especially, it's funny, I just talked to someone in HR and she was saying the HR business partner was getting too involved and wanting to own the process and almost getting upset that the leader wasn't listening to him. And in HR, we're second banana. If we're lucky, sometimes it's even banana. Let's be real clear. But we don't run the business. So we're there to advise and counsel. And there's a humility to that of knowing that you're not in operations and you won't make the decision, but how do you influence and how do you get people to understand these decisions that need to be made? As well as in HR, we don't have to know everything, which I think is really hard because we want to know all the laws, we want to know all this, we want to know how to tackle. You don't. None of us knew how to tackle COVID. you figure it out though, and you have to be humble around it and have that humility. So I think the humility is really important.
I think that's a really good point. And even when we're not even like, you know, we can use a pandemic as an example and kind of the unknowing, but one of the favorite things that I deal with kind of, if I'm dealing with a discipline issue or if I'm dealing with a wage and hour issue or something like that, and I say to HR, well, operationally, what about this, that, or the other thing? And they said, I don't know, I'll have to get back to you, because they're not doing that job day in and day out. But what they are doing is so necessary for the organization to be in compliance and all those types of things. But there's all kinds of research that says like some of the most difficult words to use are I don't know.
Yes.
And culturally, our world, like there's so much data. How do you not know? Well, it's okay to say you don't know when you don't have the answer. It's better to say that than to guess and to be wrong, even though I 100% agree with you, kind of, as you mentioned, the C and the courage and guessing and maybe being wrong and putting yourself out there. So there's like that fine line between like putting yourself out there, but also admitting in some cases you don't know is completely appropriate.
Yeah, it's really, it's difficult. I've seen, I think the most impressive, I had a friend who is so brilliant, so smart. And she said, I don't know, at least two or three times a day. Oh, I don't know. Tell me about that. And I remember that really shaped my world, because I wasn't raised like that, that you could say, I don't know. You're supposed to know things. And here she is, this brilliant woman, constantly going, Tawny, I had no idea. Tell me about that. I have no idea about that. I don't know about that. And I've seen in my program for PhDs who, again, you would think, oh, they know everything about this subject. They would give a presentation about this dissertation they just completed. And then someone would ask a question and they would say, I don't know. That's really interesting. and you sit there and you think, my goodness, if they can say it when we would assume they would know it, how freeing that is to say, I don't know. And it's really hard for HR, I think, in general, because we tend to be more of in the helping profession, and helpers don't like to say it. Sometimes it's not about their ego. It's about, I want to help you, and I'm so upset that I can't help you right now. So it's hard for HR.
Yeah,
for sure. But it's a beautiful phrase to say. Practice it today, everyone. I don't know. It's okay.
Yes. Yeah. No, we're all going to exercise that muscle so that we're ready to use it.
It's okay. And then the A is for accuracy, which is one of my favorite, because it really does get to that root cause. So we talk a lot about the five whys if people have worked in Lean or Six Sigma, and just keep asking why. And in HR, it's again, so easy to scratch the itch quickly when they say, I need a training, or I need you to, well, this is the worst, I need you to fire this person right away. And instead of just executing on it, instead of just doing it, you ask questions. Well, why is this happening? What's going on? What is this? Do you really need this training? Does this person really need to be moved to another part of the organization? Or what can we do? And so I think that very consultative skill set of asking why is so important in HR and in any profession, but especially in HR, when sometimes we come at the tail end of something and people kind of give us an order, and we're not a pizza delivery. We just don't take orders. So how could you, right? How can you ask why? And that takes a lot of courage, because they all tie together. It takes a lot of courage to go backwards and say, slow down a bit. Let's talk about it. So that's the accuracy part.
Okay. And then there's the CHA and now, so RGE, so R.
R is the resiliency. Just like you said, it's a tough frickin' job, Tawny. It is not for the faint of heart. And so how can you be resilient and have, in the morning, you're talking about wonderful things, you're bringing new people on, and then in the afternoon, there's a employee relations issue, or there's something else going on, or, oh, we lost a client and now we got to figure out how to manage that. So that resiliency is incredibly important for HR, especially. And that
in
G is
the resiliency in the roller coaster. I like to call it another roller coaster of a day. So I like the resilience with our roller coaster.
Yeah, it is such, because you're right, it's such a roller coaster. And so how can HR people take care of themselves? How can they put themselves first sometimes? Again, we don't do that. So how can you be resilient and take care of yourself? And the G is goal oriented. So we all like goals. This specifically is around for HR. Are your goals the company's goals? So if you're in an elevator and you're talking to someone and they're like, what you working on? And if you can't say I'm working on employee engagement because it drives this in the organization, probably shouldn't be doing it. If they kind of look at you like, that sounds nice, but I don't know what that does for me. You gotta, because a lot of HR people have great ideas. They go to conferences and there's best practices, but that best practice might not work in your company at this moment.
No, so it's a great point. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And then the last, but certainly not least, is that exemplary in for the E. And that all that means is, are you talking? I always say this wrong, Tony. Are you walking the talk? That's it. Are you walking the talk? And for all of us, we should do that, right? Just in our personal life, if I'm saying one thing, I should probably do it. But in HR, there's a lens on us. There's a magnifying glass on us that people see us and say, oh, you told me that I should have a great team, but you don't have a great team. Or you told me that giving feedback is so critical, but I see you don't give feedback. And so people see us, we're on this stage. We might not want to be, but we are. And people will see if we're hypocrites pretty quickly and we lose all. I have seen HR people fall faster because they tell everyone one thing, but they don't do it themselves. And the leaders just say, well, why should I listen to her at all? So that's why the exemplary, hardest one. Sometimes.
Well, I look forward for us talking about that later in the show, because I think that, you know, there's some really big concepts kind of in that last E as it relates to that charge framework. But we are at the time where we need to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. Today, we're talking to Dr. Carrie Ulrich, and we've been discussing the charge framework. And prior to the break, Dr. Ulrich went through and discussed each of the letters of charge and what they stand for. But one of the things that I think works kind of best is when we're talking about concepts like this, you know, being an HR warrior and using this charge format is sometimes when we're talking about it with regards to something that people may be struggling with. And lately, one of the things I hear a lot about is managing the hybrid work environment. And before the break, you were talking about those times where managers will call and they'll say, I want to get rid of them. And I'm finding that's happening more and more from a hybrid standpoint, because we don't know what they're doing, or we're not able to connect, or they're new employees and they're not engaging with our mission, our values, all of those things. One of the things I would love to get your thoughts on is, are you seeing the same thing? Am I kind of in my own little bubble where everyone's just saying to Tani, like, hybrid isn't working, or we can't make hybrid work, or are you seeing some similar things in the work that you do?
I'm definitely hearing people say it. So for sure, like, it's not working, or I don't know what they're working on. I don't know what they're doing, or it's so hard to pull a culture together when we're all remote. And while some of that may be true, I've also seen the flip. My business partner and I worked, this is before COVID or right about the time, it was an all remote company to begin with, and not just remote, like, you know, Alabama, Tennessee, Texas, California. This was in other countries. They had countries around the globe. They had one of the strongest cultures I've ever seen, because they were so deliberate in making sure that they hired to the culture. They cultivated that. And then they would meet once a year at an event, and to make sure they were all together and they were all still aligned to that, but they could do it. So it's interesting. It takes just a lot more work. And you had to be really intentional, no longer the accidental kind of cultural things where you run into someone, you see what they're working on, or I see they're at their desk all the time. That doesn't mean they were working, by the way, just at their desk. I mean, they might have been, it might have been really poor quality work. Let's just say they could have just been staring at the email for 10 hours and just still did nothing. But you felt that you had more power over it as a manager, right? Because I could see it, I could touch it, I could feel it, I could. And that's different now. And so I don't know if I want to say excuses, but it's a little excusey. It's a little, that's a brand new word, excusey, Tawny.
No, that definitely works.
Yeah, but it's a little like, I don't know what they do. And I'll say, well, do they have goals? Because you should just manage their goals. And then if they're doing that, then why do you care if they're like staring at the IM 20 hours a day, because by the way, you can't do that. But I think that it's harder to manage than it was before. So that is the accurate part of that statement. So are you going to look at yourself and how you manage, and are you going to adapt to the new way of work? Or are some of these leaders who we've seen in the news defaulting to, all right, you just have to be in the office for 3 days. They just say it without really understanding what would be the most beneficial. They just say it's for collaboration. Okay. Some of it is, but I don't know if you need to be there 3 days.
And it's interesting because I feel like 2 years ago, I can't believe we're saying 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Now,
right.
You know, we had leaders who adapted because they had to, because they were forced to
100%.
For safety reasons. And now I feel like we have some leaders who are saying, I did that because I had to, but it was uncomfortable and I didn't like it. And now I want to go back to the way it used to be because that's what's comfortable. And I think one of the interesting parts about that is you've had, you know, this thing to get used to for the last 2 years, 3 years, you know, depending on industries, some time in that frame. And granted, yes, you've done things that another way for a period of time. But even in that long stretch wasn't long enough for us to have holistically leaders who said we can make this work. And I think you're absolutely right, because it's harder, because it requires work, because it requires, you know, those check-ins, the goal setting. And we're also at a time in which I think in the United States, at least, that there is some social cultural aspects that are playing a much larger role in how we all work and how that changes the work environment. And it's uncomfortable, and it kind of goes a little bit to that courage, you know, you're seeing, I want to get into that, but there are these other things that are uncomfortable that are happening simultaneously.
Yeah. And you bring up this really good point, Tawny, of how hard it is to change. So let me take you back. Before COVID, there were so many of us in HR who were begging for organizations to just consider 1 day work from home a week, begging. And I know there's HR people listening going, oh, she's talking now. Oh my God, just try it for in one department, in 1 day a week, begging. Then this happens and they see it works. Productivity, most of the research is productivity was either the same or up in certain places. People are telling you, I'm in Southern California. It's a lot of traffic for some cities. And you just saved 2.5 hours a day, maybe 2 hours a day that most people are working or working out or taking care of their family or doing other things. And so, but it shows you that power of, in psychology, they use the word homeostasis, which is you just want to go back to the system, the original system. And that power, if even after 2 years, Tawny, like you said, you have data, but yet I'm comfortable. I want to go back to the old way. And so I did. And so this is what quite a few leaders and who are just going backwards, but then there are others who are evolving and their businesses will be better for it because they're evolving. They're evolving with the times. They're not trying to fight what's happening.
So let's speak to So listeners, this is your time. You're saying to yourself, you know, I want to be better. I'm listening to this because I am struggling, but I want to manage a hybrid workforce and I want to manage mm-hmm. it better than what's happening right now. And maybe if I can better manage my hybrid workforce, we can go back to a fully remote or, you know, those type mm-hmm. of things. But help me to garner those skills. So let's use that charge framework. And if we were going to start with courage and we were going to talk to individuals who wanted to become better at managing a hybrid workforce, what would courage look like from this standpoint?
Yeah. And I think too, I look at the company as a whole. So you have to look at the culture. So this is this courage part. So as an HR person, you have to look at what is the executive leadership saying and what do they want? Because honestly, it will come down to how comfortable is the CEO with either remote or hybrid or that setting that tone. And so what do they want, that CEO? And so that courage even to bring it up. So an HR person to even bring up the conversation, because maybe it's the same way it's been, or maybe that CEO said, we're going to go back into the office for 2 days and that's it. And there's end of discussion. So the HR person is the one, sometimes the only one, who's going to bring it up and say, you know what? It might not be the best right now. And we need to have this discussion and we need to be aligned. And here's the feedback I'm hearing. And so even the courage to have the conversation is so incredibly important for HR.
As it relates to this courage dialogue, it's interesting because I saw this viral post a couple of weeks ago where the company had gotten rid of all remote work. They said, nope, you come into the office, you work mm-hmm. in the office, you don't work from home. And then an individual was disciplined for not responding to, not picking up the phone outside of work hours and not responding mm-hmm. to an email, to which the individual responded, well, you told me that we couldn't work from home. So I was kind of doing exactly what you said.
Yeah.
And it's almost that courage to say, well, what are our expectations?
Yes.
Are we truly allowing employees to leave work at work
yep.
and when they go home? Or are we expecting them not only to work at work, but also kind of when they go home and they're having time with their pursuits, the things that bring them joy outside of the work environment? Is it our expectation that they're still responsive to our needs?
Right.
And
those are beautiful questions. So when you think of courage, it's really asking those questions. So let's say, even though you want remote work, you're like, all right, the executives, that's it. It's all in. Okay. But you don't have to stop there. You can ask those questions just like you were saying, Tony. Okay. Does that mean no one does work outside? Because that's what we've been saying. And so let's kind of play this out to it's to all the details and asking all those questions. There's so much power in just asking the question. You can change the conversation by just asking a question. And so that courage to bring up people aren't happy or people love it, that's HR's position in that courage to bring up what's going on for hybrid.
So let's jump. I feel like you and I could probably talk about courage for another half hour, but at the same time, like I do, you know, I know that we have listeners who are like, Tawny, come on, I'm trying to figure out how to manage this. Let's let's move on to H and humility. When we're dealing with hybrid workforce management, how do you see humility playing a role in the dialogues that we're having and how we move forward to appropriately manage the workforce?
Yeah. If you don't mind, Tawny, I'm going to take A and H together. So
absolutely.
So one of the things before you even ask those questions, so you might not go in a linear order for charge, but they work together. Before you ask those questions, you probably want to get very accurate data, depending on your executive group or depending on your managers. You want to see what's going on outside the workforce. What's the environment telling us? Are the data our employees telling us? So what's the actual data? What, instead of just saying people don't like it or people like it, dig in more. Do you do surveys? Do you have productivity data that you can look at? So that is so important to gather that data, because it's hard to ask questions without any data behind it either. And so, cause they might ask. So it's this delicate balance of this kind of this humility. It's that delicate balance of, you can't know everything and come in and asking questions, like you're leading them with all the questions, right? You can't be so like so bold, but you also can't come in and ask questions and have no data whatsoever that they're like, oh, well, that is interesting, Carrie. And so what have other companies done? You're like, well, I don't know. So it is this balance of having the data and asking the questions.
And I feel like with this situation, like with this hypothetical scenario, we have these massive outliers in the data where you have very vocal opponents and you have very vocal people who are in favor of it, who either want to work 100% remote or believe that nobody should be working remote at all. And they're, and both sides are very vocal, and that you have this large group of people in the middle who are like, I kind of still like coming in and seeing my colleagues and engaging with them in person. And I find it helpful for X, Y, and Z tasks. But I also love the fact that nobody is coming to my desk and talking to me for 20 minutes when I have something to do, and that, you know, I have more control about how I'm engaging with my colleagues. But instead, if you don't have the data,
100%,
if you don't have that A in accuracy, then you just have two loud people and you're trying to decide, do they speak for everyone?
And HR knows this, and listen, we all do it. So I'm poking at the leaders, but we all do it. Sometimes you just hear one story as a leader, and we all know this in HR. You go into the meeting, like, I heard from the loud person you're talking of.
Yes.
We should probably look at this. And you think, oh God, no, not that one person. And so if you can pull that data, you can say that's interesting because yes, 10% are this way, but 80% are saying this and the other 10% say this. And so having that, and then that humility piece though, Tani, is you might not agree with their policy in HR. You might not. You might think, you know what, we could be all remote. This is kind of stupid that we're just kind of, that we're asking people to come in or, and you either have to be humble enough to say it's their business and that they're making that decision and I'm going to figure out how to best execute it. Or you might say, I actually don't want to be a part of it at all and leave. So there's this humility in that we don't get to set the stage on the whole thing. And how do you accept that and move on? And also know that you don't know. We're still evolving. Whatever I'm doing right now for a client, I guarantee will look different in terms of hybrid and the way we work next year. There's no way, just with things like you said, Tani, social, environmental. I mean, just let's talk about climate crisis. We might say more of, you know what, we actually don't want anyone to drive anymore because we're having too many tornadoes and windstorms and droughts and fires and flooding that just stop.
No, absolutely. No, I think there's so many elements to it. And, you know, as we're talking about that humility, oftentimes it is difficult for HR if they are attempting to implement or support a policy that they themselves kind of at their core are struggling to engage with and questioning, and even more difficult to sell something like that when your core isn't truly kind of on board with the concept.
It's really hard. That's why you need resiliency. Look at that. That's because it is really hard though. And even in deciding on hybrid or bouncing back and listening to people, like that resiliency and how you're going to navigate it and be kind to yourself is really difficult. And then also, again, whatever you do now, it will be different in 6 months. I guarantee it. And so sometimes you get such pride on, I did it 6 months ago. Why do I have to do it again? It's like, oh, gotta evolve it. Gotta bounce back from it. There will be changes.
Absolutely. There's one thing that's certain, and that is change. So, and the other certain thing is it's time for a break. So, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Beryl-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Dr. Carrie Ulrich, and we are discussing how HR warriors can use the CHARGE framework to manage the hybrid work environment. Now, before the break, we started talking a little bit about resiliency and the ability to bounce back. And resiliency, I think, is a concept and a term that over the last 3 years we have been using, mm-hmm. you know, more than I think we ever thought possible. But I also see some people in HR who are just so exhausted that they said, I was resilient for 3 years mm-hmm. and I'm burnt out. I mm-hmm. can't be resilient to more like knocking my head against a wall. In most situations, my response to that is, and you shouldn't have to, and maybe it's time to make a change. And that doesn't mean outside of HR, but maybe to a different organization where you're not bouncing your head against the wall, but you are able to get through to your leaders, or you have a similar mindset. Other thoughts on ways in which this resiliency can truly help kind of HR professionals to be able to decrease their stress level, but also still like garner all the great feelings that I think we all take from this job?
Yeah. And I think for resiliency, what's so HR will take it as I can do everything. And that's not quite what it means. I mean, you have to bounce back on the roller coaster, like you were saying. You go up and down and you bounce back. But that key of resiliency is you have to take care of yourself. And I think some of the reasons that HR gets so exhausted is because they definitely put everyone before them. So Kelly and I, my business partner and I, will do some developmental classes for HR. Now, let me back up. If you are a salesperson, and you had a class on how to be better at sales, you take it. They go. They find time to go. HR folks will have a class, how to be a better HR person. And they'll say, oh, I can't. I signed up, I know, but I can't because they need me. It's an emergency. I can't. And I go, okay. But it's there. There's almost a little charge you get from it, play on words, but there's almost this spark you get, like, oh, they really need me. And helpers need to help themselves first. And so for HR, that you cannot be resilient if you're not helping yourself and you're not taking care of yourself and you now put some boundaries down. I see so many HR folks without good boundaries and they are working themselves to death on a continual basis that they don't need to do. I know that's really hard to hear, but they can't say no and it's going to be okay. That is a really hard lesson. It's a really hard lesson. But if you don't take care of yourself in first HR, you're not going to be a good HR warrior and you're going to be exhausted. And like you said, after COVID, heck yeah, you're going to be burned out a little bit. But how are you taking care of yourself? And sometimes maybe it isn't the profession for you after a while, because if you're that burned out and it's tough, it's tough.
No, I love that deeper understanding of what resiliency is and specifically kind of how it relates to individuals in HR and the helper more specifically, you know, so that leads us to G or goal orientated. When we're talking about hybrid workforces, managing them, are we just saying our goals to make it work? I mean, I think I struggle with like, how do you achieve it? And especially when we're talking about engagement and we're talking about D&I efforts, all of those very malleable terms that mean different things in different cultures. I think a lot of times people struggle with what is the goal and how do I know when I've reached it and how do I measure it?
Yeah. So I think my most natural state is goal orientation. So just as a human, I just love to set goals. It doesn't mean I reach them all. It doesn't mean I usually set them too high, but I love setting them. And so I think in the company for hybrid, again, you have to ask those questions is what does success look like for you? What does success look like? And then you can back into what is that metric? So in hybrid, you most likely, I mean, I'm going to be general, but you want an employee base that's engaged. And so you're going to have to talk to them more than you ever probably talked to them before. So gone are the days. And if you're doing a once a year annual engagement survey, meh, you're gonna have to do it more often. You're gonna have to do a pulse, do, you know, some have a little smiley face at the end of each day or week. You have to get all this feedback to see how you're measuring against that goal. If you want an engagement score of 92%, by the way, way too hard to get 92%, not even best practice, but let's say it's 80. Like, how are you measuring against how, you know, how you're measuring against it, but how are you gathering that data so you can make course adjustments? Things go so fast now, you can't do things once a year. And so what does success look like? So ask yourself, what does success look like first? You base the goal on that, and then you're continually measuring it and adjusting so you can hit that goal. But you can't just set it once and then say, okay, great. Same with employees. Like for the organizational goals, you can't just set them once and just hope that that's exactly the way it's going to be next January. But for employees, you can't do it either. Gone are the days where we said all these beautiful cascading goals that took us like 3 months to write. And then we said, great, now they're done. And then you would look at it in a year for your performance management and say, oh, look at what I did. Half those goals drop off now. I mean, you've got to check in.
Yeah, no, I mean,
those goals change all the time.
Mm-hmm. I laugh because in a lot of organizations, the time it takes to identify the goals and put the goals in writing, they've already, like, by that point when you're ready exactly. to communicate it, the goals have shifted and changed yeah. to other things. And that might be because of outside forces, it might be internal mm-hmm. forces, it might be turnover, it might be the needs just mm-hmm. of the company have evolved. And in that time frame, then to try to be like, okay, well, let's scrap all this, but should we just, you know, I think a lot of people say, well, it's just not worth it because by the time I've got one in place, it's evolving. But I think it's still important, like you mentioned, to have a target.
If you don't, then that's when you start hearing a hybrid. Well, I don't know what Carrie's doing. I don't think she works. In fact, I called her at 9 and I called her at 2 and she didn't answer. And that just, I don't know, happened to be the times I went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, like you're things. Not afforded, right? You're not yes. afforded to like get water or go to the bathroom anymore because people think you're staring at your screen for the entire time. And so like, but if you had goals, then you would say, oh, but I know she got this accomplished. And so that more communication, more measurement, more, and they can be little baby goals. Every 2 weeks you have a little goal or something, but more communication. That's what makes hybrid work difficult. You have to do more, more communication with your employees, more just individualization, understanding them at an individual level. And it's hard work. So that's why you also have to be resilient too.
So let's do that last letter, that E, the exemplary, which I'm guessing, you know, we're going to start talking about it and we're going to be like, this could be 45 minutes, but let's talk about exemplary as it relates to this topic.
Yeah, I think so if you're telling people that they have to take care of themselves, so you're in HR and you're saying, yeah, take care of yourself. And we have mental health, you know, I was going to say mental health and wellness, you're not using it yourself. Right. So you're telling everyone that we do this. We're telling everyone that we're flexible, but you don't do it yourself. And so I think that's where HR is, it's hard for HR because we often don't do what we say we tell others to do because we put ourselves last. And then also, this is where the courage comes in. If HR sees the manager's not doing it, so we're saying as a company that, oh, this is important, take time, or we're going to have shorter meetings, or you have to be on time, but the manager doesn't do it. Yeah. How's that HR person also say to them, hey, you know what? We have this. We're not doing it. You're not doing it. How can we manage through this? Because you're not casting the best shadow as a leader. So it's hard work. I talk a lot about taking care of yourself. And do I take care of myself all the time? The best? I don't know. but I know I should. And I know I need to do better at it. So, but this is a tough one.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And especially as it relates to hybrid work, because I've heard from a lot of leaders who are like, listen, I will support a hybrid work, But for me, I just like to be in the office all the time because that's how I work best. I believe that there should be flexibility for individuals. But for me, I find I'm more successful. And it's difficult because if the person isn't communicating that, it's creating this appearance of managers in the office all the time. So they expect and changing your language. You know, this is one of the things, even as I'm I manage people. When I'm talking to the people I manage, I'll say, okay, well, let's meet tomorrow. And if you're in the office, I want to do it in person. But if you're remote, then I just want to do a screen share because I do want to go through the document at the same time. I'm not saying that one of those ways is going to be better for us to have this meeting, but I just want you to know what to expect in either situation, even though like, there's a high likelihood that I will be sitting kind of in the office in the building that we operate out of, but that doesn't mean that I need everyone else to be, but communicating very specifically. And it sounds silly because it's almost like, why did Tani just spend three extra minutes describing where we each physically would be located? But it was the clearest way that I could say, I don't need you to be physically present if your plan is not to be physically present tomorrow.
But now you just you've crystallized everything we've been talking about and why it's hard to be a manager right now. Because back in the day, if everyone's in the office, what'd you say? 11 a.m. conference room. Yeah, and that was it. And you treated everyone kind of the same way. You talked to them the same way. And Tani, what you've said is, I'm more intentional. I think through it. If you're here, you can do it this way. If you're there, we'll do it this way. This is my goal. This is how we're all going to come together. And that took you an extra 3 to 5 minutes. And so if you multiply that 10 meetings a day, you're up to 50 minutes that you have now said this. And so now you've given the perfect example of why it's so hard. But here's the payoff. Those employees on your team said, wow, she understood me. She heard me. She doesn't favor one over the other versus if you're a manager who still thinks like that and says, everyone's going to be in the office at 10. And then let's say I'm not because I'm remote and they forget about me. They don't have the screen share the right way. They're just like, oh yeah, Carrie's not here. Oh, okay. Well, you'll catch up later. Who's not going to get a promotion? And God forbid, I'm not like the group that's represented in that room. What if I'm the only female? It's all males, or I'm the only male, all female, whatever. Now, guess what? Maybe I don't even feel like I think they don't even care about me.
Yeah. No, all very, very good points. It's time for another break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Barrel-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Dr. Carrie Ulrich. And today we have been discussing the use of the charge framework and how we can all become HR warriors. And we've specifically been doing it as it relates to managing the hybrid work environment. You know, we focused our discussion a lot on that hybrid work environment, and I think it served as a really good issue to have the charge dialogue around. But super hard question, because I feel like there's so many answers to this. But if you were to identify the most difficult thing that HR leaders are faced with currently, what would you say that is?
In one word, the unknown. So I think we have so much unknown. And whereas our jobs were a little more staid and typical back before, even before COVID, they were starting to change up a little bit more. But In HR, we have to manage more unknown, and we can make these beautiful plans and things change. And so to have that flexible nature and to almost embrace that there's unknown, that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, for HR, because they don't have all the answers. You can't just go to best practice and go, ah, this company did it this way, that will work here. It's so individual. Your company's culture is unique to your company's culture. And so you have to navigate this unknown and be flexible and just be a really good problem solver. And just knowing the laws in Wyoming, that's not going to help you. You can find that. So how are you going to navigate all this and not get burned out? That's, I think, the biggest challenge for HR leaders.
No, it's a, I think, a super important, you know, comment that you make of this unknown. And I see it a lot lately as well with organizations that are trying to effectively manage succession planning and looking at not today's leaders, but who's tomorrow's leaders will be and how they engage with the work environment and putting time and energy into team members and then finding themselves in a position where somebody says, this just isn't what I want to do. Or, you know what? Life is too short. I have refurbished a van and I am going to live in the van and drive across the country. And, you know, and some of those might be extreme examples, but what it is, you know, I think we see more and more employees in the workforce now who are doing what they're passionate about. And if it's not what you're doing, then there isn't the same, I don't want to, the same strings that I think held back other generations have been cut. And whether or not that's the generation itself, whether or not it's the pandemic, whether or not it's culturally kind of all of the things that are going on in the world, whether it's, you know, climate issue, all the things, right? Whether it's one thing or a host of all of these things, you just see people entering and staying in the work environment in a very different way than they have in the past. And I would agree with you that some of that is all of those unknown things.
Yeah. And so if you have a good framework, to help you think through those things, but that's your biggest challenge is the challenge you don't even know yet that's around the corner. We all have heard the great resignation and AI and ChatGPT and the succession and going living in a van and driving around, because that is a rip from the headlines for sure, Tani, that they just go, I don't need this anymore. We all know that we're looking for answers. Well, you got to kind of embrace it and just use kind of a problem solving mindset and figuring out how to make it work, which is tough.
Absolutely.
Will be needed far beyond when the robots take over, Tani. HR will still be needed.
I definitely agree. For our listeners who want to contact you, you've got The Way of the HR Warrior. They can buy your book. But then if they want to contact you, if they are interested in your company and the work that you do, how can they get in touch with you?
Go to our website, which is abracigroup.com. And there's contact form there. You can also LinkedIn with me. There's not many Carrie Ulriches. So it's a pretty easy name to search and go, oh, there she is. And so contact, I love to talk to anyone about just being a better HR person or companies who are wondering, what should we do? And what kind of HR do we need? Here to help.
Thank you so much for your time today. I have really enjoyed our discussion. So thank you so much.
It's been a blast. Thank you, Tani. Thank you for the work you do too.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.